In the robotics world, success depends on more than a unique idea. Reinventing the wheel. Developing technology already available in the market not only creates bottlenecks, but it also sends costs spiraling. So how can you streamline production and kickstart revenues? By integrating off-the-shelf technology. CG Connect, a hardware-agnostic plug-and-play microcellular modem, offers fast, secure access to the cloud. CG Connect links any uncrewed vehicle to Cloud Ground Control's cloud-based drone fleet management platform. Focus on building core technology by leveraging CG Connect for a cost-effective, scalable solution to fast-track market readiness. To learn more, visit cloudgroundcontrol.com. Welcome to episode 114 of the Robot Report podcast. I'm your host, Steve Crow, editorial director of the Robot Report. Thank you, folks, for tuning into the show. As always, we're joined by Mr. Mike Oitzman, editor of the founder of the Mobile Robot Guide. What's going on, sir? How are you?
Yeah, Steve, I think we're still in the afterglow of the event last week. What a great time. Just, you know, it's been fun to catch up with folks even now virtually after the event and hear all the great things that they experienced while they were there and all the great conversations that happened in the hallways. It was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have all the recordings from the sessions from the Robotics Summit and Expo. So again, if you are a full conference attendee, sponsor, exhibitor, we'll be sending out soon audio recordings and slides for most of the presentations. There's a few folks who have asked us to hold off on sending out their slides. So we got to be cognizant for them. But yeah, stay tuned. We're going to be sending out all the great content from the show here in the next week or so. So be on the lookout for that. But a great show here today, Mike. Mike had a chance to sit down with Xavier Orr. He's the CEO of Advanced Navigation. They're joined by one of their customers as well. Michael Ahrens, he's the co-founder and CEO of Clean Earth Rovers. We'll play that interview a little bit later on in the program today, Mike, but just quickly tease that for us. What did you guys all talk about?
Yeah, we're gonna go in detail about Cloud Ground Control, the solution that they've developed, and we're gonna hear, you know, from a customer who's deployed it in Michael Ahrens. Now, this Clean Earth Rovers, interesting young company that started as a university project, and it's a autonomous marine vehicle that I sort of call it a sort of an autonomous pull skimmer for the ocean.
Sure.
So interesting solution in there. They deployed the cloud ground control solution to help advance their solution that much quicker. So
yeah, sign me up for anything that tries to clean the oceans, right?
Yeah, it's a right.
Major problem. So we'll get to that a little bit later on in the show. We'll also break down some of the news items of the week here in just a minute. But we did want to remind folks again that the call for presentations for Robo Business is now open. If you enjoyed the Robotics Summit and Expo in Boston, we're doing something similar on the West Coast in Santa Clara, California, October 18th and 19th. If you go to robobusiness.com, you can learn all about it. Again, a robotics development event. There'll be a little bit more of the business stuff about investments and maybe RAS, robots as a service, how to raise some funding, stuff like that. But we'll again be heavy on enabling technologies and having industry leaders come and share some case studies about how they're doing, what it is that they're doing. And we'll also be focusing in on field robotics in our field robotics engineering forum. It's a two-track conference at the show, where again, it's all about developing and deploying field robotic systems, which to us, Mike, is anything that operates outdoors in dynamic environments, right?
That's exactly right. And again, you know, focused on the technology differences and additional requirements for those types of devices. And again, mobile devices, unmanned, uncrewed devices, even, you know, outdoor applications for industrial robot arms and those type of things, but you know, things that happen outdoors rather than indoors, and the various different requirements that go around engineering and building such a system.
Yep. So that again, October 18th and 19th are the dates of the show out in Santa Clara, California. And if you want to be considered to speak at the event, the deadline to enter is June 16th. So about a month away here. Again, just go to robobusiness.com You'll find the form there to enter a speaking application. And again, we already got a bunch of speakers and fun things in the works, so we'll be updating that website here in the coming weeks and months as we go. So again, October 18th and 19th in Santa Clara, California. Hope to see you all there. All right, moving on to the news of the week, Mike. A few stories here that we need to discuss, and we have you folks covered with our network of robotics sites covering the global robotics industry. If you're not following us, check us out at therobotreport.com, mobilerobotguide.com, roboticsbusinessreview.com, and collaborativerobotics.trends.com. I think we're going to start with some bad news, Mike. I don't think this was a bright spot for the industry this week. A report out there that North American industrial robot sales were down in the first quarter of the year. This is from the from A3. And according to A3, in Q1 2023, North American companies ordered 9,168 robots, which is down 21% from the same quarter last year. I don't know how you want to slice it and dice it, but not some great news, I don't think.
Right. But I mean, it's almost a quarter of the market percent down. So I think that a little bit probably the exhaustion post the pandemic where things seem to have accelerated. Interestingly enough, I don't know how the economists are going to explain all of this 10 years from now. But, you know, it's an interesting business school case about the economy, overall economy, and the changes. So I don't know that we could continue growing at the rates that we were over the last couple of years on the industrial robotic side, but probably, you know, who knows what this bodes for the rest of the calendar year.
Yeah. So some of the pundits are saying, you know, when thinking about potential reasons for the 21% drop, they're looking at all the economic turmoil that has happened, right, to start this year off. Are companies that would be adopting automation be a little bit more cautious? Have they put things on hold? I'm sure that's certainly part of it. I think the concerning part of it is that this was after some tremendous, tremendous growth over the last couple of years. And one thing before we dive a little bit deeper into the numbers is that this should be noted that the A3 only collects, so I'm not even really sure how reliable this is to begin with, but they only collect sales data on traditional industrial robots, right? So when you hear that the numbers are down 21%, that's only for what I call old school industrial robot arms. This does not include AMR sales, doesn't include AGV sales, doesn't include collaborative robotic arm sales, doesn't include, as far as I understand, legged robotic sales, which are starting to open up, and we'll get into that topic here in a little bit. But again, this is only for old school traditional industrial robotic arms. But the industry has always been on the really automotive has been the backbone of the industry, right? Where what happened, I think it was the first 9 months of 2020 and 2021. Non-automotive robotic sales topped automotive sales for the first time.
Yeah.
This is where it gets scary for me. Automotive companies accounted for 68% of all robot orders in Q1 in North America, according to A3. Non-automotive companies, which I just said, led for the first time ever for part of the time in 2020 and 2021. Orders by non-automotive customers down 42% compared to Q1 of last year. It's nearly half, nearly a 50% drop in orders of robots by non-automotive customers, which is a problem.
Well, Steve, I saw an unrelated report to this that folks are hanging on to their automobiles longer, right? So rather than buying new vehicles, people are driving their existing vehicles for a longer time. I know it's true for me. I'm driving a 10-year-old vehicle. And, you know, for whatever reason, personally, you know, folks are making the decision to use drive their used vehicles for longer, whether that's, you know, the cost of a loan or what have you. So there's a lot of other impacts here that sort of trickle down potentially for, you know, why automation might be down, especially in automotive.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And even within automotive, I think a lot of the, 68%, almost 7 out of 10 robots are ordered by automotive companies. That's a large percentage, but a lot of these companies, especially in North America, are changing over their manufacturing lines, right, to produce electric vehicles now. So that's a big part of it. But, what happens a few years down the road when those lines are more established than they are right now, and that 68% drops, and hopefully you'll see a bounce back in these non-automotive customer orders. But man, almost a 50% drop is very, I don't know, I guess maybe it shouldn't be surprising for me. I mean, you see all these companies in robotics that are unfortunately going through layoffs and people losing their jobs. We talked about Six River last week, and what happened there, being acquired by Ocado. Most of their employees have been let go. And so maybe that number shouldn't come as a surprise for me. But I almost feel for these for the folks who are working on robots that are being sold to non-automotive companies. It's like a 50% drop, that's not an easy pill to swallow. So for all this hype, all this positive talk that we hear at all these different shows, like, you see that and it's like sort of a reality check. But again, keep in mind, there's a lot of different types of robots that aren't included in these numbers. So I guess we'll just something that we'll have to see, wait and see, and keep an eye on. Moving forward, IM Robotics came out with an announcement this week where they're relaunching the company, Mike. Is that what they're essentially saying, with a new product focus? Seems to be a Six River or Locust competitor. Is that right?
Yeah. And relaunch, rising from the ashes, however you want to describe it. They have changed their portfolio, no longer doing the mobile manipulation with the Swift robot, but have moved, as you stated, into a person to goods type of application, still working in the warehouse, but again, working with the in-house associates to take them to, the location of specific parts, items to pull, SKUs to pull, and then delivering that to pack out location. So directly in competition with the types of applications delivered by companies like Six River and Locust and a few others.
So I don't think we've written about this yet, right?
No.
Because what we're trying to do here is dive a little bit deeper into what's actually going on. And I don't think it's really a surprise. Before we started recording this, Mike and I were kind of talking through this story, but they were very, very early to the mobile manipulation game. Obviously too early, right? Didn't work out for whatever the reason. Maybe the system didn't work right. Maybe it wasn't worth the price. Maybe all those factors combined. Maybe people, the industry wasn't ready for it. I don't know.
It's hard to engineer.
Yeah, sure. Very hard. Nobody's really done it, right? I mean, yeah. I guess you could call Boston Dynamics Stretch a mobile manipulator, but it's not really mobile. So yet at this point, it's really only being used in stationary applications by its customers. Very hard engineering problem, often described as the holy grail, right, in robotics. So this is a story that we're trying to figure out. Mike's talking with some folks from the company and some others in the coming days and weeks. So we'll try to learn more. And instead of just relaying, like, here's their new product, sort of go through the evolution of the company. But shout out Tom Galuzzo, who I didn't know. Mike told me this before. Tom Galuzzo, one of the founders of IM Robotics. He's spoken at shows that we've run a number of years, is now just a board member. Somehow I didn't know this. He's the director of engineering now at Near Earth Autonomy, which works on navigation systems for uncrewed vehicles. But we'll have to see what they say. I do have a little bit of a bone to pick with them. I know they were, and again, this is the PR spin and the marketing spin, so I don't, they're just trying to do their job. They said they emerged from stealth mode with this product. And how do you emerge from stealth mode after 11 years in business? I mean, you can be developing a product behind closed doors, I guess, right?
I think we're going to learn more about this. I hope to learn more about the story as it actually happened. But they made the decision to rework their entire portfolio Unfortunately, there were some layoffs that we followed, you know, earlier this year, you know, that some folks were let go. So again, they reconfigured the company, they reconfigured their product line, whether you want to call that, you know, just going back into a period of silence where they had to rethink exactly what the organization was going to be and the product line was going to be, whether you call that stealth or, you know, just putting their head back on the shelf for a bit and now reemerging from the ashes of the prior company. Yep.
Yeah. So stay tuned. We'll have a little bit more on that in the coming days here. Thanks to Mike's work. Sticking with the mobile robotics theme, some positive news from DHL. They signed a contract to bring on 5,000 more AMRs from Locus Robotics. Of course, we've talked a lot about Locus. Certainly seem like they're the leader, Mike, when it comes to deploying AMRs for warehouse and distribution centers. They've had a long partnership with DHL, but to see DHL go back to the well and order 5,000 more Locus bots is only a positive thing, right?
Well, yeah, and in light of what we just talked about, when you look at a news story like this, 5,000 robots in a single order is enough to make any robotic company executives salivate. And so, you know, I'm sure when the folks at IAM were thinking about what they could do based on the technologies that they have, this is an interesting reason why, you know, they're going to focus on this specific use case and workflow in the warehouse.
So Locus's AMRs, they're being deployed across DHL's global network of warehouses and distribution centers. And I thought this was an interesting quote from a DHL executive. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name because I'm going to butcher it, but it's the chief executive officer at DHL Supply Chain. And I've heard this from other people about why Locus has the advantage over some of its AMR competitors. So I'll just read this. It was in the release. But I think a pretty good way to encapsulate why Locus continues to be the leader in the space. Quote, an idea is only a good idea if it can scale. The flexibility and scalability of the Locus solution has been instrumental in helping us meet the evolving demands of the e-commerce landscape and leveraging cutting-edge technology to optimize our operations and deliver an even better experience for our customers, end quote. I don't know how you get a better recommendation than that from the CEO of DHL Supply Chain, but kudos to Locus. They continue to kick some major you-know-what in the space. Switching gears here, we talked about Legged Robotics a little bit earlier on in the show. Shout out to our good friend, Aaron Prather, for joining us at the Robotics Summit last year. He's now the Director of Robotics and Autonomous Systems Programs at ASTM. They announced a new Legged subcommittee, Mike. And a little interesting note, Aaron announced this on his LinkedIn channel last week with a photo from our Robotics Summit. It was him and Adam Norton, who's also on the F45 committee, standing in a booth at our show next to Spot from Boston Dynamics and Digit from our friends at UMass Lowell. So shout out to them for doing that. But what is this new Legged subcommittee all about?
Well, it's going to try and, you know, set some standards. It's ASTM is a standards body in terms of, you know, setting some tests, just talking about what it means to be a Legged robot and how for customers they can begin to now sort through the different types of solutions that our vendors are going to provide. And, you know, from a standards perspective, being able to create some tests to compare robots. I mean, I sort of, in one analogy for ASTM, it's sort of like Consumer Reports, right? They are trying to create some ways for the end users to compare solutions and all of the types of testing and things that they create, you know, create ways as well as for vendors to say, you know, what's the market expect? And, you know, what can we, you know, what are the things that the specs and features that we should be developing, you know, against those market requirements. So it's just a great opportunity now with this subcommittee for industry users and developers to come together and talk about the future of this submarket.
And this covers both biped and quadruped robots. So yep. Two-legged. And four-legged robots and
eight-legged, 10-legged, who knows what the
how many, what's the number, what's the maximum number of legs you can fit onto a robot? Yeah. But I mean, let's be honest here. The first test that they have to come up with is is the hockey push, the hockey stick test, right? Like how much abuse can a quadruped or a biped withstand, right? The old Boston Dynamics video where they're beating Atlas.
Well, you know, we talked with Aaron at the show last week, and, you know, one of the things that he says is obviously folks should be concerned about is if one of these bipedal robots is to lose power and collapse, right? And let's say it weighs 50 kilograms. I don't know what the average cost weight of one of these robots is going to be. How does it fail in a way that it doesn't, you know, take out somebody standing by nearby it? So those are the things that Aaron believes are important for, you know, this market to solve. And the type of tests that they want to develop is, you know, yeah, if the robot loses power, what happens to it? How does it collapse in a pile in a way that it doesn't, you know, destroy stuff or injure somebody nearby?
Yeah. And we have the story. If you can read it, we'll include a link in the show notes on therobotreport.com. But to your point, I'll just read the end of this quote from Aaron that was sent out in the press release. Quote, with the lack of test standards that can show performance levels of any type, it is going to be a challenge to convince the public and potential regulatory agency that these robots can operate around humans, especially in public settings. So it's interesting. Digit from Agility Robotics, they had that great demo at ProMat a few months ago now. It fell, I think, once or twice. I think it was, I saw it collapse once. I think that was maybe the only time that it fell. In the way that it falls, I don't know if they've engineered it to fall that way, but it falls in a pretty safe manner. It just kind of drops straight down like a ton of bricks. But yeah, I think it's certainly a valid concern. If, you know, folks who are unfamiliar with these technologies and how they work, if they are operating or working or somewhere near them and something goes awry, everybody kind of has to be aware of this. But I will say one final thing before we go here. You know, Aaron, if you need any testers, if you need any non-engineers to help you test these things, I'm your guy. You know how to reach me. I'm happy to come push these things around and be a test dummy for any legged robots that ASTM is able to get their hands on. So again, happy to help you in any way possible. But yeah, that's it for the news of the week. And again, we have you folks covered with our network of robotics sites. You can check us out at The Robot Report, Mobile Robot Guide, Robotics Business Review, and Collaborative Robotics Trends. And Mike, before we get to our interview with Xavier Orr, let's take a quick break and learn more about the Mavlink communication protocol and CG Connect from our sponsor, Cloud Ground Control, in this tech tip of the week.
In 1926, Nikola Tesla said that when wireless technology is perfectly applied, we'll be able to communicate with one another instantly, irrespective of distance. Fast forward almost 100 years, and wireless networks are indeed the bedrock of global communications. Yet not even Nikola Tesla envisaged that when perfectly applied, this technology would be responsible for creating one of the world's most sought-after assets. That is, big data. But despite being around for over 30 years, big data to many businesses is still an enigma. Of course, the true value of any data is in the analysis. Critical insights produce business intelligence. However, without this intelligence, businesses can't make fully informed decisions. Always two steps behind their competitors, they consequently struggle to compete, let alone build a dominant market position. So in the field of robotics, how can manufacturers and operators fully leverage big data? And what's the best option for processing, storing, and analyzing data from multiple sources in real time? The answer, Apache Kafka. Kafka is an open source distributed event streaming platform designed to move massive amounts of asynchronous data from points A through to Z and to any other destination technologies as needed, all at the same time. It enables the capturing of data from such sources as databases, sensors, mobile devices, and cloud services, the storing of data for later retrieval, and the manipulating, processing, and analysis of data both retrospectively and in real time. Now, when building a robot, the engineering challenge is to integrate a data streaming platform capable of handling real-time data feeds from multiple sources at a massive scale. Cloud Ground Control, a cloud-based command and control solution for operators and manufacturers of uncrewed drones, ground rovers, and sea vessels, is such a platform. Kafka serves as the backbone of Cloud Ground Control's data infrastructure, enabling the live streaming of high-volume telemetry data from multiple vehicles, all available simultaneously to multiple users through a web browser. Thanks to Kafka's high scalability and fault tolerance, Cloud Ground Control can reliably ingest, store, process, and forward vast streams of data with minimal latency. Cloud Ground Control offers operators improved real-time situational awareness and enables more informed decisions. And by facilitating analysis of stored data, it provides the opportunity to uncover those critical insights that help businesses build a sustainable competitive edge. To learn more, go to cloudgroundcontrol.com.
Now on to the featured interview for the show. Mike, you had the opportunity to recently sit down and talk with, as we mentioned before, Xavier Orr, the CEO of Advanced Navigation, to learn a little bit about what they're doing, what they're building, and how it is helping robotics companies.
Hey, on the show with us today, I've got Xavier Orr. He's the co-founder and CEO of Advanced Navigation. Xavier, welcome to the Robot Report podcast. I'm excited to learn more about Advanced Navigation and what you guys are doing with navigation technology and software for outdoor robotics.
Thanks for having you on, Mike. It's great to be here with you today.
Yeah, thanks. And also on the show with us today is Michael Ahrens. He's the co-founder and CEO of Clean Earth Rovers. They're a partner of Advanced Navigation. Michael, I want to welcome you to the show as well. And I'm excited to learn more about your solution and how you guys are using CG Connect and Cloud Ground Control from Advanced Navigation, you know, to help make your solution what it is.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here and share this platform with you and Xavier.
Great. Well, Xavier, let's start with you. Certainly, I want to learn more. I want the audience to learn more about Advanced Navigation. So can you tell us a little bit about your passion for robotics and how you started Advanced Navigation?
So Advanced Navigation started as my university thesis in 2008. And really, it's about applying neural networks to robotics applications. And around 2017, we started work on Cloud Ground Control, which is basically a cloud-based drone fleet management platform where you can control thousands of drones from a web browser all at the same time. You can have multiple users, and it can control the drones over cellular networks, satellite networks. So it really gives you that flexibility and power to be able to control robotics platforms and drones remotely and safely with the team of people.
So take me just a little bit deeper for a minute. I mean, when you talk about bringing this from a thesis, what were some of the things that you were exploring in your graduate work that became the core technology behind Advanced Navigation, and where did you see the need in robotics for that capability?
Yeah, so there's an algorithm called the Kalman filter, which is used everywhere in robotics, and it's been around for a very long time. So its last really major updates that are in widespread use today were in the 1960s. So I did my thesis on a neural network alternative to the Kalman filter. And that had really great results, and so really big performance gains out of it. And that technology actually has applications across robotics in a wide number of places, and that's really the technology behind Advanced Navigation and feeding into the Cloud Ground Control product as well.
So we talk to robotics startups all the time here on the Robot Report podcast, and the audience is full of other folks who are either in the midst of running a robotics startup or considering starting a robotics startup. But I think, as I hear from many folks, and this is where I just want to get your perspective, I mean, starting a robotics startup, not necessarily for the faint of heart. It's not necessarily the easiest thing to start a hardware-based company. So, you know, what can you tell us maybe then some of the valuable lessons that you've learned in your tenure and your adventure here of starting a robot company that might be useful for others that are considering a similar path?
Yeah, sure. I mean, from my perspective, I think, you know, the two core things are product and people. So it's incredibly important to have a product that's suited to, for the market. So actually, like, the first part of that is the market research. So doing a lot of market research, speaking to people, and really getting a great understanding of a product that's going to fit the market really well is critically important. And then, you know, then you can go away, take those requirements, do that product design that fits the market perfectly. And that's really going to set you up for success. And then I think the second one is people. So, you know, you obviously, you know, you need the people, really skilled people around you to be able to execute on delivering that product to market. So finding the absolute top talent is key to that. And I think a big part of that is bringing them along for the ride. So, you know, giving those people stock in the company, you know, and also just finding really top tier, you know, you need the best of the best if you're going to make it there.
Yeah, well, I think I hear the same thing from many folks. Market fit, one of the most difficult things to get right, you know, creating solutions, testing those solutions, getting feedback, pivoting quickly to, you know, where the market wants to take you. How about partners in the importance of having the right partners to help you take the product to market or finding the right customers to help you, you know, get that market fit where you want it to be?
Yeah, so I think it's critically important to have alpha and beta programs with your products, mm-hmm. Where you're kind of doing early testing with the customer, and you still have the opportunity to make small changes to the product at that time. And you know, you're picking a partner, you know, who you can comfortably work with there, you know, who has a really great application and who has the skill to kind of give you the that market fit feedback. And that's where we've had, you know, a really great relationship with Clean Earth Rovers and Michael Ahrens. And that they've been really great, you know, providing all that feedback on the platform as they've been testing with it.
Well, with that point, then I want to hear from Michael a bit about a little bit more now about Clean Earth Rovers. And so Michael, can you tell us a little bit more about your company? What is Clean Earth Rovers? Tell us the solution that you guys have concepted now and brought to market. And then we'll talk a little bit deeper about, you know, how and why you decided to use the solutions from Advanced Navigation to help you along that path.
Yeah, so you know, similar to Xavier's story, Clean Earth Rovers is actually you know, kind of started out of a university setting. Something that I was working on in my undergraduate in 2017 is just an idea, like drawings in a notebook. And what we were working towards was building autonomous drones to manage pollution in coastal waterways. And eventually in 2019, we had won a local pitch competition and kind of kickstarted us into pursuing it on a higher level. And so Clean Earth Rovers is building autonomous vessels that they're small in size, they're 5 foot by 5 foot, and they operate through coastal zone.
About the size of a small dinghy, yeah.
Yeah, and they're made for picking up all types of different pollutants and responding to different disastrous events like oil spills or harmful algae blooms where maybe you have, you know, cyanobacteria or fish toxins, even fish kills. And then also responding to more generic pollution, such as plastics. And so our devices are built to hold up to 100 pounds of debris at a time. They have a 20-hour operating system or 20-hour runtime on them. And then you know, using CG Connect, we've got the ability to run many of them, you know, in many different geographic regions at the same time.
Would you describe it? What I sort of think is sort of a open water pool skimmer in a sense, right?
Yeah. One way that's, we've referenced it in the past is almost like a Roomba for coastal waters.
Okay. There you go. So again, the picture here is that you've got fleets of these that you want to deploy near shore and run a mission, create a mission, run a mission to go back and forth over some pattern. And that was the basic design of your device. And now you needed to have some way to remotely control multiple units at the same time. And is that where you discovered the solution that Advanced Navigation had in CG Connect to help bring your fleet together?
Yeah, it was that. And it was also simplicity of being able to map and program missions. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the current technologies are highly technical, and you can't pass it off to a customer on a tablet and just expect them to figure it out in a day or even a week, likely. And so from a user experience, like having cloud connected devices and a simple, like easy to understand intuitive interface was really critical for us and the people that we're selling to.
So Xavier, was the solution then that Clean Earth Rovers presenting here, was this one of the target applications, type applications that you envisioned, you know, with the design of CG Connect and the cloud ground control, you know, to solve this problem?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess it's really, you know, it's one of the key applications for the technology is a fleet of robotics platforms connected over cellular. Our cellular modems back to the cloud, where you have this user interface that's really easy to use, you know, and well suited for like Michael said, for a customer to be able to go in and just use it. You don't need to be technical. You know, you can use it anywhere from any machine without too much training. And be able to monitor and control fleet of robotics platforms from anywhere in the world.
So I think you started off at the top of the show talking about drones, and I think we can all envision what a drone is and what it does today in a variety of applications, from surveying to inspection to just fly. I mean, even search and rescue type of applications. In every one of those applications, the operator is local, maybe even line of sight, and they are controlling it with the drone flight controller in the case of a flying drone, so that they can give it its mission in operation. Describe for us then how CG Connect, as you described it as a cellular modem, fits into the overall design of the platform, whether that's an aerial drone or the case of Clean Earth Rovers, a marine unmanned device, to take maybe that local control or in sync with that local control, but to centralize it so that you can operate these things, I suppose, locally as well as remotely. I'm trying to understand the use case or use cases here that covers.
Yeah, so I guess at the moment, the most common thing you see is really you have drones, and then you have a local operator, and you have one person controlling a drone or a robotics platform at one time, you know, using either remote control or some autonomous features, but they're still kind of at the wheel, like controlling it. And really, if you think about it, you know, when we're really not making the best use of the technology there, like these platforms are capable of full autonomy, and really, you know, having a dedicated person per autonomous system, it doesn't make too much sense. So cloud ground control allows you to perform what's called BVLOS missions, which is beyond visual line of sight. And what that's really doing is taking the operator out of the field, you know, with a line of sight to the robotics platform and putting them, you suddenly have an operator in a control center, or you can have, you know, they can be anywhere, you know, and they can monitor and control a fleet of robotics platforms remotely in this control center. And then rather than having one person per drone, you know, you can have one operator in the control center controlling a whole fleet of drones at the same time. And that's where you really get that impact of the autonomy, and you expose the robotics platform's full capabilities there.
Now, beyond visual line of sight applications, I think we can understand, you know, how that's supposed to run. In the U.S., certainly there have been some governmental restrictions on the ability to do that with flying drones until recently. I'm not sure that I completely understand how that applies around the rest of the globe. Has that been a barrier for getting this going for aerial drones, or what from where you sit, how has this opened up those type of applications now with the type of controls that you can provide to those customers' needs?
Yeah, so safety is absolute key to robotics operations. And so, yeah, you do need to work with the regulators to get your robotics platform certified to operate in beyond visual line of sight, and then you need the platform certified, and you also need to have the appropriate skills to operate the platform in that way and the different technologies on board the robotics platform. So there is a whole suite of things you need to do to get set up to be able to operate like that. And really, that is all about safety and security.
I think the good news, it's been about a year now since they've begun to give permits for operators to actually operate officially, right, beyond visual line of sight operations for inspection type of applications, infrastructure inspections and others. And I think that door has been opened now that the regulations are defined and folks have a path forward to get their permits and begin, as you said, you know, safe and viable operations, and your technologies enabling those operators that want to make that happen. So, Michael, I want to dive a little bit deeper into the Clean Earth Rover's business case and solution for a minute. So can you tell us a little bit more now about, you know, how you're actually deploying your rovers and how you're engaging with your end customers, or you expect to engage with your end customers to run these systems?
Yeah, that's a great question. So really looking at it from the business case or the customer's perspective, it's a lot of current disaster response or pollution cleanup is being done by hand. Whether it's volunteer networks or municipal contractors, whoever it might be. And it's just, we have too much water around the globe, too much coastline to not automate this process in some manner. And so at the moment, we're actually selling these through a distributor model down in Florida with another group that we've partnered with. But looking kind of forward or future focus, what we're going to begin testing this summer is actually providing this as a cleanup or robotics as a service, where we will have, starting out while we're testing this model, one operator that is actually taking the drone to businesses, to municipalities, or different pollution events around a specific geographic region. And if that proves to be successful, what we're ultimately going to be building towards is having one centralized docking station where all of our rovers can be programmed and scheduled to go out on autonomous missions, and they can all be overseen by one operator. And this way, it makes it much more accessible for emergency response. If there's an oil spill, we could be there in minutes. If there is a fish kill where suddenly you're a small business owner, like a marina, and you show up to work and there's 100,000 dead fish in your water. We could be there right away on that robotics or cleanup as a service. And so working with municipal partners and coastal businesses that really rely on clean water, that's kind of where we see this moving forward. So there would be ideally one person overseeing many different devices as they're operating at the same time through cloud ground control.
Interesting. So you've got to have a connected fleet, obviously, so that you can change the missions, controlling them or even monitoring them from some central operation center. I think that's what I've seen with other robots as a service type solutions with that centralized fleet management. So I guess at some point when you realize you want to do this multiple robot control, multiple drone control, you had to decide, how you were going to do that. So talk to me a little bit. Then you had to make some sort of build versus buy decision for bringing this together, and talk us through that and how you arrived at the decision you made.
Yeah. So I mentioned we kind of came up out of the university as well and received a lot of the resources we had to do R&D through the University of Cincinnati. And we at the time were working with some PhD and master's students that were actually trying to build us more of like a Tesla model type autonomy. But when we would talk about timeline and path to market and things, like we didn't ever envision people really wanting to stand and operate these by hand. And their timeline trying to take that route was like on the line of 3 to 10 years, like a very long time. It's a very difficult thing to do. And so as we started to explore alternatives like ground control softwares, we were running into things like Mission Planner and Q Ground Control, which for our application just and our users as well, wasn't going to be suitable. And so we had some of this funding from the university that was purposefully allocated to working with autonomy and the software development that we needed. And we did have this crossroads of, are we going to try to build our own cloud connected mission planning software, or is there already something out there that exists? And so over a period of time, we actually stumbled upon what Advanced Navigation was building through cloud ground control. And luckily they were, I think, at a really receptive time where they were far enough along in the development of it that they needed people to start testing it and validating everything. And we were early enough in the development of our technology where we could pretty seamlessly integrate it in and build around to fit their network.
I think this is a very interesting use case. And I think you're not alone, Michael, in terms of coming to this point, especially with the robots as a service type business model and the need to have a connected fleet and to control and monitor those from a central operations center. And Xavier, I think this is quite an interesting, solution that you guys are pulling together here. And in one case, we talk about industrial robots, that are being controlled through robots as a service, needing a network connection on the LAN or on the Wi-Fi. You guys have actually built a wireless modem that uses cellular, because obviously you're talking about unmanned, uncrewed devices in a variety of use cases, of which we just heard from Michael being one. So this is a very interesting market. I assume you've got a variety of other types of applications as well across the board. Can you give us some other examples of similar use cases for groups of unmanned devices that can benefit from having a cellular connection as opposed to Wi-Fi connection, where Wi-Fi is not a possibility, right?
Yeah, so I guess a few of the good examples at the moment, we're working with the Surf Lifesaving in Australia here. They operate drone fleets along all the beaches. looking for swimmers in trouble, as well as monitoring for sharks and crocodiles. And so they're able to utilize the cloud ground control platform to have a basically a centralized control center where they're monitoring all of that. They have, AI models running that are looking for those sharks and looking for those crocodiles. They can flag, flag immediately to the operator that it's spotted something. Some of the other great applications is in fire. The fire services around the world use drones quite a lot for kind of scoping when there is fires or where they suspect there's fires, to locate the exact spot where the fire is. And so being able to send out a fleet of drones to cover a wide area to be able to track the fire down is another great use case for the product. We also have the products working on mine sites, on work sites, on ground vehicles. We obviously have Clean Earth Rovers for the marine vehicles, and then of course a lot of drones as well.
So very interesting that one of the things we don't think about when we go swimming in the ocean here in the U.S. is we think about sharks, but we don't think about crocodiles unless you're swimming off in Louisiana, maybe the southern coast where they might be present. But I guess what a clarifying question there is, interesting that it's not the lifeguards necessarily that are watching all the swimmers are flying their drones. Someone else is flying the drone and monitoring what feedback it might give, while the lifeguards that are present on the beach, they're doing their real-time job of making sure no one's drowning, which is a different need.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, I guess, lifesavers in a lot of areas, they'll have two objectives, which is, looking for hazards in the water, as well as, rescuing people in trouble. And it can be difficult to balance, having to try and be on top of both at the same time. And so you do have the drone operators to give you that that additional sort of knowledge of what's going on. But at the moment, or prior to cloud ground control, usually it's the drone operator who's looking through the glasses to see the camera view, who's actually looking for the sharks and the alligators, looking for the hazards. Whereas now we're able to do that back to the control center, and using AI to be able to identify those hazards and pop alerts up on the screen, and then they can notify the lifesavers so they can immediately react. We get a faster time for reaction to get people out of the water and a better safety.
Well, Michael, before we go, I just want to come back to your solutions with the Clean Earth Rovers. I think what you're doing is a very interesting idea. And so, can you tell us, or do you have any good stories here to tell us about deploying your solutions in any of the recent disasters? Have you had a chance to use it in a real life situation? And what was the result?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the good use cases of that is, not long after Hurricane Ian, we had some disaster relief contractors reach out to us and inquire about doing some demonstrations down in Naples and Fort Myers, Florida, which was kind of the epicenter of where all the destruction of the hurricane hit. And we got down there and really just saw nothing but devastation. And so we were there in December doing about a week's long worth of demonstrations and showing how we could actually be proactive and create a safe operating environment for these contractors as they're being hired to go in and clean this up and help with remediation efforts. And ultimately we were back there then in February, where the same contractors had signed a distributorship agreement with us, and they're looking to provide it through their contracting service, but they're also looking to provide it not just for things like hurricane disaster relief, but also for things like harmful algae bloom and red tide oil spills in lifetime. And a lot of those disaster relief contractors, they're putting on hazmat suits, they're going out in John boats, and they're picking this stuff up by hand. And so it becomes a very dangerous operating environment for them to do manually. But you put an autonomous vessel or fleet into the picture, and their jobs not only become a lot safer, but also a lot more fun.
Great. Well, Michael, before I let you go, can you just tell everybody in the audience where they can go to find more information about your solution?
Yeah, you can go to www.cleanearthrovers.com.
Yeah, it's got pictures on there, video, give you the chance to learn a little bit more. Well, thank you. And we'll put a link in the show notes for that. And Xavier, I want to thank you for your time today and the discussion about starting the company. And of course, it was very interesting to learn more about CG Connect and cloud ground control and the types of use cases that you all are setting up the industry to deploy.
It's been a pleasure, Mike.
My quick closing thought on advanced navigation in your interview there with Xavier and Michael Ahrens.
I think, one of the most innovative things I learned about their product portfolio beyond the software that is cloud ground control is, the fact that they developed a plug and play modem. And again, the use case, Steve, you think about it, take a commercial off the shelf drone that it has been developed to operate on a point to point, the operator with the drone controller, line of sight control, right? What they're doing at Advanced Navigation is providing the opportunity for you to network a fleet of drones and operate them remotely. And I think those are a lot of the future use cases that the market is expecting to see. So that's the exciting thing that they're doing. Look forward to following their success in the future. And you can find more about them on the web at cloudgroundcontrol.com. And we'll put a link in the show notes for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again to Xavier Orr, CEO of Advanced Navigation, and Michael Ahrens, co-founder and CEO of Clean Earth Rovers. That's going to do it, folks, for episode 114 of the show. Mike and I, Brianna, and our team will be at Automate next week. Hope to see many of you there. I know we will. A reminder, again, call for presentations is now open for Robo Business. That runs October 18th and 19th out in Santa Clara, California at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Again, focusing heavily on enabling technologies for all different types of robots. We are going to hone in a little bit on field robotics. So any robot that operates in an outdoor dynamic environment as part of our field robotics engineering forum. If you liked what we did in Boston with the Robotics Summit and Expo, I think you'll love Robo Business as well. So we have a ton of great speakers already lined up, a ton of great stuff for those 2 days of the show. Again, go to robobusiness.com if you want to learn more or be considered for a speaker. You could obviously reach out to Mike or myself. You know how to reach us, and we'd love to see you guys all there October 18th and 19th out in Santa Clara. Again, that's going to do it, folks. Episode 114 of the Robot Report podcast. Thanks again for everybody tuning into the show. New episodes of the show drop each week. You can find us anywhere you listen to your podcast. Please subscribe, leave us a rating, give us a review, tell your friends about us, help us get more listeners to this program. Would really appreciate it. On behalf of Mike Oitzman and the entire crew, my name is Steve Crow. Thanks again, folks. We'll talk to you again next week.